are smashed by the club of the Lord, which becomes muddy with the blood of such demons. Om again, Timidan Dasya, Giran Jana Shraka, Chakshur Nuditamina, Tasman Shukurve Nama. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadara Shivasti Guru Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yoga must include meditating on the Supreme Personality of God. That means meditating on the form of the Lord. It's impossible for people to actually understand what is religion unless they understand the personality of God. Our human life is meant for becoming absorbed in meditation on the Lord's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Some subject must be there for your mind. Your mind is always thinking of something, contemplating something, analyzing something. The whole point of Srimad Bhagavatam is to present to you the meditation on the Supreme Lord, so that you can see that is by far the superior meditation. When your mind is absorbed in thinking of Krishna and his service, only then will you know peace. This is explained by Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna bhakta nishtam atayam shanta bhakti mukti siddhi kami sakalaya shanta. Everyone wants peace of mind. Those who are sense enjoyers, they hope that by indulging in sense gratification, their mind will be peaceful and they'll be free of anxiety. Of course, the actual process is that the more you take shelter of gratifying your senses and becoming caught up in your body and mind, the more you are filled with anxiety. That is the unknown law of nature. Because you are not this body, how can you be peaceful by acting like you're the body? No, instead, you'll increase the amount of anxiety in your life. So your quest for peace will never be satisfied. Individually or socially. How can there be social peace when people have no idea how to develop good qualities? It's not possible. If everyone simply has allegiance to their own sense gratification, then what higher standard is there? Everyone has their own individual standard, whatever is pleasing to my senses. In this way, you'll have chaos. The irony of current so-called civilization is that it is destroying itself. By encouraging everyone that there's no dharma, there's no universal religious principles, by encouraging everyone to just make their own standard of life, that urging causes the downfall of the civilization. Because people have no reason to have any duty, no reason to have any honor, no reason to have any integrity. Everything is just based on how your senses feel at the moment and how you can rationalize to yourself what you're doing. If people are not trained to control their mind and senses, if they're not trained how to be austere, clean, simple, honest, with both theoretical and experienced knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how is there going to be peace? This simple point is impossible for people to understand because they're so caught up in passion and ignorance, they can't see the obvious. There must be a section of society which has a head on its shoulder. And that section of society, those persons with a head on their shoulder, they can be the head on the social body. One of the things we are doing in the Society for Krishna Consciousness is trying to develop a section of society that actually has brains. And it's not easy, especially these days when people have obliterated their consciousness by so many drugs and lusty activities from a young age. Still, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is so powerful, it can turn all that around. So let us just think. How can we have any trust in society if no one can control their senses? How can any families? Families are based on trust, a covenant, a bond. But if persons can't control their senses, if they're taught or not taught how to control their senses, then there's no question of family bonds lasting. As soon as you see something else that you want, you'll go for that. Even amongst the older generation of New Zealanders, persons who are in their 50s and 60s, you can see that it's not unusual for a husband or wife to walk out of a marriage after 25 years, just for no reason at all, that I want to change. I want to speak of the younger persons, the teenagers and the young adults. They certainly have no allegiance to anything except how their senses are feeling at the moment. So how can there be an orderly society? How can there be family life with its duty and commitment? That's why people don't want to even marry anymore. You don't want to say those vows through sickness and wealth, through sickness and health, through poverty and wealth, all kinds of circumstances, till death do us part. No one wants to say that. Just, well, we'll see how long we can work together. If it doesn't work, we just call it quits, the problem. If they're children, it doesn't matter. The children will understand that you just have to do what's best for your own sense gratification. If we're honest like that with our children, it'll be okay. Because they're going to do the same thing anyway when they get older. Everyone's just going to go for their own sense gratification. In this way, the whole society becomes plunged in chaos because no one is training people how to control the mind and senses, how to live a disciplined, simple, focused life on the Supreme Absolute Truth. Without that, there is no hope for true progress. And you can see that today. In spite of the profusion of technological gadgets, people are in more anxiety than ever before. Srila Prabhupada gave a very direct example, but you can think about it and you'll see the whole point. How can you have peace amongst people who cannot control themselves? Not possible. Would you go out into the street where there's a bunch of, you know, barking street dogs, and would you say, "My dear dogs, please be peaceful"? Would you do that? You can't tell that to dogs. They can't control themselves. They're barking uncontrollably. Their senses are just caught up in whatever attracts them. No, you have to ask creatures to be peaceful that can control themselves. But how do you expect world peace amongst human beings who have no program of sense control? So if you're actually concerned
with the state of the world and how to bring world peace, then you must focus on how to educate people in the value of sense control, understanding their spiritual identity and their relationship with the Supreme Soul. You must do that. There's no other sane alternative. Economic development will not satisfy anyone. The more that we live our life separate from the Supreme Lord, the more we'll be filled with anxiety because we're misusing the purpose of the human form of life. In a real human society, life should be tailored so that we're always having opportunity to think about the Supreme Lord. This verse is pointing out the detail of the four-handed form of the super soul in everyone's heart. The Lord in his four-handed expansion form carries two things for the demons and two things for the devotees. Those two classes will always be there. This is the most important classification of the material world. Not so much who has money and who doesn't, but who is divine and who is demoniac. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita. There are two types of entities in this world, divine and demoniac. Both come from Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna claims all living entities as his offspring, as his children. Sorry, Krishna says, you should know that all living entities, they're coming from me. They take their birth in material nature, but I am the source. So, whether you are divine or demoniac, you're coming from Krishna. But you get different results according to how you relate to Krishna. But the different results are all beneficial. Therefore, even when Krishna personally kills the demons, they come out better. Any way you come in contact with Krishna, you come out better. That is God. So the Lord Vishnu has two things for the devotees and two things for the non-devotees. He has his conch shell and his lotus flower for the devotees, and he has his disc weapon and his mace for the non-devotees. So Krishna has something for everyone. He's full in himself and perfectly knows how to reciprocate with everyone. Now, it might be hard for you to see people around you as a demoniac. It might sound a bit strange. I mean, they're not that bad. They just are ignorant, or they mean well. All that is true. But still, looking at the situation quietly, if you act in such a way that violates the human purpose of life, then this is demoniac. Now, some people are under the influence of demoniac lifestyles and demoniac culture because they're weak and they just don't know any better. Alright, so you can say they're innocent, they're misled. That is true. But still, they're acting in a demoniac way. They don't mind living without understanding what is the goal of life, who is the supreme proprietor. They don't mind living. When you hear the word demoniac, then you should understand what is the meaning. Does it mean someone with horns in their head and carrying a pitchfork? No. Those who are demoniac can look like very normal citizens, but because the purpose of their life is far from what it should be, therefore,
they're grouped in the category of divine. We're trying to reach out to those who are unintentionally divine, the innocent. But those who are determined to be averse to Krishna, what can you do about it? And there are persons like that. The Lord uses his club and his disc for those who are non-devotees, divine men. The disc is for separating the head of the atheist from the shoulders. And the club is for hammering on the head of the atheist. Then for the devotees, Krishna has the lotus flower, which symbolizes auspiciousness. And Krishna has the conch shell, the sound of which signals auspiciousness. So Krishna has something for everyone. We have to understand there is a standard in this world. There is dharma. There's things you do and things you don't do. Very hard today for people to accept that, because they think the individual is the source of the standard. You are the captain of your own ship. You live your life as you like. You can tell yourself that, but there is a universal standard. And if you violate that universal standard, you suffer. So much of our effort is for trying to get people to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they can think of Krishna. Once your mind starts to think of Krishna, it will act wonderfully for you to go back to Godhead. The same mind which is giving you trouble now, or maybe it's giving you trouble, it haunts you with memories of your materialistic past. Just when you thought you had it mastered, it haunts you. That same mind, if you just give it a chance and you patiently, if you just give the process of bhakti yoga a chance, and you patiently and determinedly endeavor in devotional service, you will see that your mind has great possibilities for acting in such a way to bring you back to God. That same mind that can sometimes give you trouble can act wonderfully for your achieving the ultimate goal of life. And how does the mind act in that way? Wonderfully. Thinking how to serve Krishna, meditating on Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. That is the perfection of religion. Any so-called religion without a specific program for meditating on the Supreme Lord is not going to help the people. Where do you go to get knowledge of the Supreme Lord in order to meditate on that knowledge? Where do you go to get knowledge of the Lord's name, form, qualities, and activities? Because that knowledge is not present, people don't care for religion. Why should I go to church? Why should I go to synagogue, temple? They don't realize that the knowledge of the Supreme Lord is available. They can take that knowledge. Instead, everyone thinks that religion is just about belief. In Krishna consciousness, we teach you, religion is about knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Not just metaphysical knowledge, psychic knowledge. That's very insignificant. But knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we should be very, very eager to understand Krishna. That's the difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. The non-devotee, the materialist, or the Dhamanya, if you will, they are against hearing about Krishna. They actually don't want to hear about Krishna. Do we eat anything? When they hear about Krishna, they become angry. Why so much attention for Krishna? Can you believe this? Those who are demoniac, they'll challenge you.
The yogi should meditate upon his club.
Why should we think that God has four hands and in one hand he holds the club? This is just someone's imagination, they'll tell you. How can you say that? If you're honest, you'll say, I don't know. Maybe this is God, maybe not. But those who are demoniac will just immediately deny. No way. God can't be like that. Well, how can you say that? Suppose you tell me, this is Christ Church. And I say, no, it isn't. What does that imply? It implies I have some knowledge that I can present so that you'll see this is not Christ Church. You say, this is Christ Church. I say, no, it isn't. That means I know something. I should say what I know. So, if the Bible says, this is God, you say, no, it isn't. That means you have some knowledge to put forth. Why? This is not God. So, what is it? Where's your knowledge? They don't say. No, no, not Krishna. But if you say not Krishna, that means you have some understanding of something else. So what is that understanding that causes you to say not Krishna? Never answer. Not Krishna. It's like if you bring me some halwa for lunch, I'll say, no, not halwa. Meaning I have to have something else. So you want to know, what do you have in mind? You said, no halwa. So what should we bring? Similarly, if someone says, not Krishna, okay, then what do you have in mind? What is the science of God? I can't tell you. Just not Krishna. This is envy. Do you understand? Huh? Yeah? You also have to challenge yourself for understanding Krishna. Don't just read these verses and in a superficial way. Well, I'm supposed to read. Okay. The yogi should meditate on his club. Understand the mind. It's very dear to him. His club smashes the demons. Oh, I don't know. It doesn't sound so nice, smashing the demons. Anyway, keep reading. Maybe I'll come to a section of purport that I like. Is that how anyone reads? When you read these books, you should challenge your intelligence. Let these books of Srila Prabhupada's enter into your heart and your intelligence and transform your heart and intelligence. How can Krishna be equal to everyone when some get the lotus flower and the conch shell, the others get the disc and the club? Does that mean the Lord is partial? No. Everyone comes out better who deals with Krishna. Our greatest task is to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That shows our heart. We want to see Krishna glorified. Just like Yudhisthira Maharaj at the Rajasuya Yajna. He told Krishna, personally, we Pandavas, we don't need to worship the demigods or invite them, but we want them to come to this great yajna, this great Vedic sacrifice, so that in the presence of everyone, it can be seen that you, Krishna, are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everyone is your servant. The Yudhisthira Maharaj was concerned. Some people think you're an ordinary person, Krishna. That pierces my heart when I see misunderstanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, I want to do this great yajna so that your glories will be established and everyone can know who you really are. That's the heart of a devotee. Always seeking to establish the glories of the Supreme Lord. This is the point of our whole operation here in Christ Church. We are establishing the glories of Krishna by distributing prasad, food that's been offered to the Lord, by distributing the holy name of the Lord, by distributing books, shastra, the holy literature which presents the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is our heart, establishing Krishna's presence in this world. Of course, Krishna is always present, but people are blinded by their materialism. They don't see. So we're doing humble service on behalf of Krishna by seeking to establish Krishna's glories. In the most degraded times, the most sinful age, and because it's most degraded time, you get extra credit from Krishna by seeking to establish his glories in this age. You want to find your heart in devotional service? Then immerse yourself in Krishna's glories and seek to establish them. You'll always be full of vibrancy in your heart. Everyone likes to have a vibrant heart. You know, that feels like when your heart vibrates. In bhakti yoga, not simply your heart will vibrate, also your mind will vibrate with thoughts about Krishna. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, he had that plan to perform the Rajasuya Yajna so everyone can see Krishna's true position. So first he had the brahmanas recite their mantras and do all their rituals to start the yajna. He invited Shiva, Brahma, Indra, the lords of the universe. And he said to Krishna, look, actually, the rulers of the universe, if they're fortunate, they'll get an order from you to carry on their head. It's amazing that you, Krishna, will carry out the order of these kings when actually these kings should be fearful. Still, because you're acting like a human being, you carry out their order. But I know who you are. I know you are the Supreme Personality of God. After mantras were chanted and the preliminary rituals of the yajna were performed, it came time to do Agra Puja. Agra Puja means that at these grand yajnas, the most worshipable person who's attending should be selected, and that person should get public worship. That's a necessary part of these grand Vedic rituals. Now bear in mind that the whole yajna was full of persons from different planets, exalted sages, yogis, demigods, even Brahma, Shiva, and Indra are there. Yet Krishna is also there, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there was a discussion. Who is the most worshipable person here? That there was some discussion indicates that not all the rishis and sages present there were of the topmost level. Some of them were just understanding Brahman, the all-pervading spiritual effulgence. So there was some discussion. You may think, well, if Brahma or Shiva were there, if Vyasadeva, yes, Veda Vyasa was there, why didn't they say something? Immediately, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Happened to be in hell. The Acharyas say that Brahma and Shiva and Veda Vyasa were thinking, now, no one asked our opinion, so we'll just be quiet for a while. Anyway, Sahadev is here, one of the Pandavas, one of the young Pandavas. He's expert at analyzing the situation. If Sahadev doesn't say something, we'll say something. But we'll just wait for now, because after all, no one even asked us, so. So after the debate was going on, who should get the Agra Puja? Sahadev stood up, and he presented Krishna. It's quite obvious who is the most worshipful person here. Krishna's glories are so well known, it's even superfluous, not even necessary in one sense, to talk about them. They're so obvious, but still, we talk about them, because that is our duty, and that is our love. Let's talk about Krishna's body. He doesn't have a body that's affected by the six material transformations of birth, growth, maintenance, giving off offspring, diminution, and death. These material transformations, these shabdvikar, they don't affect Krishna's body because his body is completely spiritual. Furthermore, there's no difference between Krishna's body and himself. And any limb of his body can do all the other functions of the other limbs. Although the fact is, as we explained a few days ago, when Krishna comes as his original self, generally he eats with his eyes, hears with his ears, because that way his pastimes have a very human-like charm. Still, the fact is, angayasya sakalendri vrittimanti. The Lord can do any function with any of his limbs. As we often point out, Krishna can impregnate with his eyes. Good thing you can't do. But the Lord's senses are all interchangeable. So Sahadev brought that out. It's clear Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's no qualitative difference between Krishna and the living entities. They are all of the same quality. All the demigods are just part of Krishna. So Sahadev went on and on like this, establishing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, when he finished, everyone cried out, Jai, Jai! Sadhu, sadhu, you have spoken excellently. That's how it's done in vague circles. When someone says something that's extraordinarily appropriate, sadhu, sadhu, what you have said is precise. I guess the colloquial equivalent you'd say these days is spot on, spot on. But the Vedic terminology is sadhu, sadhu. Excellent, excellent. So everyone prepared to worship Krishna, give Krishna the Agra Puja. Yudhisthira was so happy. Yes, they've understood. My mission is becoming fulfilled. They understood the whole purpose of this yajna is to glorify Krishna. Now that Krishna had been rightfully chosen to receive the Agra Puja, Sahadev had made such a glorious speech establishing the Lord as the personality of Godhead. Even in the presence of Brahma, Shiva, Indra, residents of higher planets, great yogis and sages and Kshatriya kings. Now things could get going. So Yudhisthira Maharaj was so happy. So he performed the Agra Puja. He bathed the Lord's feet and then took the water and sprinkled it on his head. Yudhisthira's head, he sprinkled it on the head of his wives and family members and ministers. And he was so overwhelmed with joy that tears were filling his eyes, and he couldn't clearly see the Lord as he was worshiping him. This is bhakti, full of emotion. Have you ever been so happy that tears have filled your eyes and you can't properly see what you're doing? That kind of happiness doesn't exist in the material world. Just think about it. You're so happy, tears are filling your eyes, and you can't see what you're doing while you're doing it. That's the devotional ecstasy that Yudhisthira Maharaj was feeling as he performed the Agra Puja for Lord Krishna. But then, as we said, there are two types of living entities in this world, the divine and demoniac. So at the Rajasiya sacrifice, you had mostly the divine present, but you also had a few demoniac persons. Shishupala was the chief one. Shishupala could not forget, I was meant to marry Rukmini, but Krishna kidnapped her. Actually, Shishupala was always averse to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, you read about Shishupala, that even as a little baby, before he could talk properly, he would blaspheme Krishna. It goes for several births, because you know, actually Shishupala and his mate, Dantavakra, they are Jai Vijay, who had three births as demons in the material world. So, Shishupala couldn't tolerate hearing Krishna glorified. He was fighting to restrain himself as Sahadeva spoke. But he was able to restrain himself because he had a plan. He didn't want to cause a disturbance whilst Sahadeva was speaking and the person was being chosen for the Agra Puja. He wanted to wait till a key moment of the yajna when he could cause the maximum disturbance. So he was just holding on while Sahadeva was speaking, glorifying Krishna. I'll wait. This is not the time. I can cause a much greater disturbance if I just wait longer. It was hard though, hearing all this glorification of Krishna, that he controlled his senses, he was disciplined. So then, after the Agra Puja was done, Shishupala saw this is the time to destroy everything of sanctity of the yajna. He stood up and started waving his hands, catching everyone's attention. Isn't it amazing here, the effect of the time factor? I can truly see that time controls everyone. Because even though we have such extraordinary personalities here from all over the cosmos, with the greatest intelligence, they have been bewildered by this young boy, Sahadeva. Isn't it amazing the power of time which rules everything, that even the intelligence of the greatest persons here has been spoiled, and they dare to listen to these words of Sahadeva, a foolish boy who's presenting Krishna? How can anyone think well of Krishna? Do we know when his family dynasty is? He acts outside of all varna, all ashrama, all the social classifications. He's oblivious to it. We don't know his family tradition. Is he a kshatriya, born of warriors? Or is he born cowherd farmers? What is he? We don't know. Furthermore, this Krishna always acts in such a way that he's outside of religious principles. He does his own thing. As if he is the judge of religious principles. And look at his activities. He left the city of Mathura, which is populated by saintly persons, and he built himself his own city in the ocean. And he lives there in Dwarka, where the Vedas are never heard. There are great personalities in this assembly. Austere yogis, powerful sages, all of whom can give salvation and give relief from material existence. But in spite of their presence, we have chosen Krishna. but he was going on and on like that. I think Krishna to be nothing better than a crow. Crow was considered to be a very low-born bird. In India, especially in Calcutta, the crows are so expert at being crows, going for refuse, that if you clear your throat when you have a bad cold and spit, crow can catch it from the air. The crows are very low birds. They're always seeking nasty things. But this is what Shishupal said to Krishna. I think him to be just a crow. You can imagine what the devotees were feeling. The pious kings and the pandavas were just tugging on their swords, just ready, let's get this guy. We gotta finish him off. Those who were contemplating that we can't do anything about this, we're not powerful. They just left the assembly covering their ears. Because everyone knows the Vedic injunction that if you're present when blasphemy of the Lord and his dear devotee is being performed, you'll lose all your pious activities. So some person just left the assembly of the yajna, covering their ears. They didn't want to hear. Others, they said, they thought, we can do something about this guy. We can take him out. They were just raring to go, let's tear him to pieces. Because they're worried. What was Krishna doing? Suppose someone would insult you like that. It'd be very difficult for you to be quiet. You can't say that about me. What about you? I know something about you. But Krishna was just quiet. The Shastra describes Krishna was just quiet, like a lion. Quiet when a bunch of jackals are howling. You don't know what jackals are. Jackals are very low types of jungle animals. Almost like dogs. No one takes them seriously. So Krishna was quiet. Krishna did not protest. But Krishna was thinking, if I let the kings attack Shishupal, it will destroy the whole sacrifice, which is exactly what Shishupal wants. Shishupal wants that there's violence at the yajna so that the results of the yajna will be nullified because blood has been shed. So Shishupal's causing this great disturbance, hoping that there'll be a fight, there'll be violence, and then Yudhisthira's yajna will just be a complete flop. So Krishna's thinking that. I can't let a fight happen. So Krishna decided, I'll deal with it myself. The Lord with his disc weapon prepared to cut off Shishupal's head. What was Shishupal doing meanwhile? He saw that the kings were ready to attack him. Did that make him calm down or become more diplomatic? No. He prepared to fight also. Even though he was completely outnumbered, he was so mad with pain of Krishna that he lost his good military sense. And so when he saw the kings pulling on their swords, ready to come at him, he, okay, come on, I'll take you all. Maybe you see that kind of scene in school or something, someone just, you know, just comes wild like that, just, come on, I'll fight all of you. That's what Shishupal. You see it seems like that? He was just so proud, you know. He was a great military general, but he lost all his good sense. So at that moment Krishna took care of the situation to stop a battle during the sacrifice. Krishna released his disc weapon and cut off Shishupal's head cleanly, so that not one drop of blood was shed. This is how expert Krishna is. Because if blood is shed during the yajna, during the Vedic sacrifice, it ruins the sacrificial arena. If blood, which is considered very contaminated, falls in the sacrificial arena, then the whole thing is spoiled. So Krishna, with his disweapon, cut off Shishupal's head in such a way that not one drop of blood came in the sacrificial arena. Then a great roar came out as people saw what happened. The whole assembly was, and while the roar was going on, Shishupal's few supporters, they slipped out the back door, so to speak. And then everyone watched as the departed soul of Shishupal rose in the sky, leaving the body of Shishupal, rose in the sky, and everyone could see the spiritual spark merge into the body of Krishna. So Shishupal obtained liberation. Those devotees are not at all concerned with merging into the body of the Lord. In fact, they think that's hellish. Because if you merge with Krishna, you can't do any devotional service. A devotee wants to retain individuality for the purpose of giving pleasure to Krishna. But anyway, here you can see that even though Shishupal was so inimical toward the Lord, he got to merge into the Lord's existence. He obtained liberation from material life. Therefore, Krishna is all good. No matter how you contact him, you come out better. There was one famous comedian in the USA. He said, the worst thing you can do to me is not to talk about me. You can praise me, you can criticize me, but talk about me. The worst thing you can do is not to say anything about me. So that's also the worst thing you can do about Krishna, is not say anything about him. Even if you criticize Krishna, you'll benefit after suffering for a while. First you suffer for your blasphemy, and then you get the results for having said Krishna's name. It's like if you walk down Colombo Street, you're having Harinam, and somebody walks by, you blankety blank Krishna's. First they suffer for the effects of blasphemy, but then later they get the effects of having said Krishna. So Krishna's all good. Anybody you contact him, you benefit. Still, you can't expect those who are demoniac to get the same benefit that the devotees get. But still, everyone benefits. The more that we hear Krishna's pastimes, the more we become attracted to Krishna. Krishna is so attractive that just look at the result Shishupal got. Why? Because actually there was not one moment that Shishupal was not Krishna conscious. He was just negatively Krishna conscious. He was always thinking of Krishna. Ah, I hate him. I hate Krishna. Krishna, I can't stand him. That's Krishna consciousness. But negative. Not recommended. It's much easier to love Krishna, and the result is better. But still, because Shishupal was always thinking about Krishna, even with hate, he got liberation from material existence, because he was negatively Krishna conscious. So we want Krishna to be on everyone's mind. Just like maybe your parents, some of your parents, they're not favorable to Krishna consciousness. But because you're practicing Krishna consciousness, they're talking about Krishna. Their friends ask them, what does your daughter do? Oh, she's with the Krishnas. They chant. They get credit for chanting. Well, how do you feel about that, that your daughter's with the Krishnas? Oh, it just makes us so angry. You want her to be a normal person, a normal girl, you know. Why? you chanted that. She doesn't drink with us anymore. She doesn't bring her boyfriends home anymore. So we can feel it's all in the family. But they're chanting Krishna's name. So they benefit. So don't be the few of you who have parents who are unfavorable. Don't be an anxiety about it. The more they talk about what you're doing, the better it is for them. And you can see, gradually some of them will be purified. First it's thought of saying, our joy is with the Krishnas. Then after a few years it'll get lighter. Our joy is with the Krishnas. Then after 20 years, our joy is with the Krishnas. I've seen it happen. The point is, however you come in contact with Krishna, it'll be for your benefit. You'll come out better. The best result, of course, is attained by those who seek to love Krishna. Krishna has special things for them. Himself, he hears. That's far more valuable than liberation from material existence. Krishna will give himself to you. Therefore, a devotee says, I'm not interested in liberation from material existence. Whether I'm in the material world or out of the material world, if I have Krishna, what else do I need? I have everything. Any questions? You know this pastime? Rajasuya Yajna? You know that one? Your mother read it to you? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, I heard in one class, one Prabhu said that Putana, she went to Goloka Vrindavan?
Yes. That's there in the Bhagavatam. Okay. You haven't read it?
I haven't read it.
She got the position of a nurse of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. That's why Uddhava is explaining in the third canto of Bhagavatam, Aho Bhakyam Stanakala Kuta. Who do you know who's more merciful than Krishna? How can you find a person more merciful than him? Putana the witch came to kill him. And Krishna gave her a position in Goloka Vrindavan as good as his own mother. So how do you find anyone more merciful than Krishna? And what does Lord Brahma say in the 10th canto? He said, my mind is just boggled thinking how there is any other reward than you. You are the embodiment of all benedictions. You've given yourself completely to Putana. So what's left for the Vrijvasis who love you so much?
Sometimes on book distribution, you may make friends with someone distributing a book, and then sometime they fry them out or something, somehow or other.
They fry them out?
Just by forgetting that you met them and you asked them again. And somehow or other they become.
Just because you asked them again?
I don't know the reason. Sometimes it happens. So what happens to them?
What they say? Don't you know you already gave me one of those books?
You asked me four times already.
Great! The more that they see you, the more purified they become.
Even if they become less friendly?
That's why it's good to distribute prasad. Especially, how many years have I been saying that? In a small city like this, people will be seeing you again and again. So if you distribute prasad, some kind of sweet, a little sweet room, and they'll be eager to see you. Their tongues will start to salivate. Got me those sweets. That's the best way to deal with such a situation. Anything else? Yes.
Well, Rumaj mentioned how those of the money nature, they rationalize with themselves that what I'm doing is okay. Could you talk about that in relationship to, sometimes I find myself doing that as well, rationalize, this is the way I am, these are some of my habits. And could you find that in a minute and how to solve that problem?
Bhakti yoga involves two things at once, as I always explain. Transformation and distribution. So we're always trying to give Krishna to others, at the same time we're always trying to transform ourselves. That's love. For the sake of the beloved, we want to improve ourselves. If you care for someone, you won't just say, well, this is the way I am, so can't do any better. Relationships become stale when you say it like that. But when in a relationship, you're always trying to improve and progress and refine and purify. That's what keeps things lively. So if you just say, well, it's just the way I am, it's just the way I do things, that's not very enlightening. You can say, this is the way I am, but I'm going to try to do better. That's it. Don't wallow. That's not the way to love. Love is progressive, dynamic. You have to work on relationships. Even relationships in this world you have to work on. You can't just say, okay, we have a relationship, so that's just the way it is. No, every day you have to work on it. Whether it's family relationships or relationships with even in the brahmacharya ashram or brahmacharya ashram, you have to work on it. Relationships with devotees require work. To not take them for granted. Then you're entitled to see the ever freshness of love and Krishna consciousness, if you're willing to work at it. It's the best career to work on loving devotees. It's the greatest art. So what I do, I always pray to Sri Sri Gaurataya, please teach me the art of diving in the ocean of relating with devotees. Keeps life interesting. But as soon as you start saying, this is the way I am, that's just the way it is, life gets boring. Your spiritual life gets boring. When will the devotees understand, this is the way I am, this is the way I'm going to be, and don't try to change it? That's boring life. The dynamic life in love means, how can I change to give pleasure to the beloved? Even on the material plane, you can see that in relationships. When the so-called love is fresh, everyone's willing to change, right? Anyone have experience? Yes? Oh, how would you like me to be? You say that in the first couple of years. Oh, you don't like this? Oh, I'll change. Don't worry. Anything else you don't like? Right? You get it, it's like that, right? And another person, no, I'll change for you. No, I'll change for you. It goes on and on like that. Okay, we'll both change for each other. In the first few years it's like that. I've seen. Then as the years go by, what happens? You become set in your ways. Look, this is just the way I am. You just don't have to accept that. I'm sorry. And the other person, well, if I have to accept the way you are, you would have to accept the way I am. I'm sorry. And you know, the thrill is gone. That means the relationship has lost its freshness. Just like on Sankirtan, you can see, I always explain, the new couples, they're always walking down the street, you know, just plastered on, you know, next to each other, you know, just, you know, holding on tight to each other. You can tell that's a new romance. And a few years later, you may see the same couple, and they're, you know, not even holding hands anymore. A few more years, you see the same couple, and the woman's walking ahead, the man's walking behind. You see them? Okay, yeah. It didn't start like that. When they first started out, they couldn't walk down the street as two persons. They had to, you know, just hang on to each other as they're walking. You've seen couples like that? Just hanging all over each other, just, you know, afraid to just let go as they walk down the street. But you can give it a short time, and then there's some distance. Then they don't hug as they're walking down the street, they just hold hands. Then they stop holding hands, you know. There's a few centimeters in between them, then the distance starts to get greater. And finally you see the lady walking ahead, looking at all the shop windows, and the man chatting behind, you know. Yeah, you see that? And she's looking at the shop windows and says, "Come, come." And the man goes, "Yes, dear. Is that what you want? I mean, do you really want it?" And the man just thinks, "Well, when can I get home and watch the rugby match?" Don't treat your bhakti like that. You keep ever fresh by always trying to improve yourself for Krishna's pleasure. It's necessary to hear about Krishna because then you'll always be inspired to improve your relationship with Krishna. As soon as you stop hearing about Krishna, you become dull. And Maya covers you, and you start to act in a very mechanical way. Your devotional service becomes very, very mechanical. Then you even start to do it with a grudge. "Well, I have to do this. Oh, as everyone will say in Maya, so I have to do this." And then you become very callous and insensitive about your service. You start treating the devotees callously. "Here, take this. Prabhu! Prabhu!" You forget Prabhu means master. "Prabhu, did you have to do it that way?" But if every day you pray to the deities, "Let me swim in the ocean now. Devotee Association, learn how to splash and dive and surface in that ocean." And Krishna will give you the ability how to associate with devotees. It's actually a loving art you have to learn. The art comes to you based on your loving desires. "I want to love. Krishna, please teach me how to love." Those who love Krishna's devotees are more dear to Krishna than his own self. Of course, part of loving devotees is you have to be able to help. Not love in the sentimental sense. Part of serving devotees is to help them make spiritual advancement. Not that loving devotees means you can never say any fault, but there's a proper way to do it.